Oh, great. Okay, terrific. Okay, so this is the second of our series, and we have quite a bit today. I hope that we get through all of it. I'm doing this on my own this time without the support staff in Israel, so hopefully we'll make it through. Okay, so one of the pieces of feedback that I got from last week is that people would appreciate a little bit more personal information, sharing myself a little bit more through this, which usually I do in a class. Just here I don't have the facial feedback, the chatting with everybody that's here, I'll try to put it in. But please feel free to ask something if you'd like to, either by email or in the text box, in the question box. Of course, by email during the class. I'm not checking emails, but you could ask for next time. And on the point of emails, I really appreciate those who sent in the form getting to know you. I read most of them, not all of them, carefully. I want to print them all out and really take some notes so that I'm clear on everybody's goals and where they want to head. But I really appreciate some of the great sharing that went on there. It's really terrific. Okay, let's get started. Let's see if I can make this work. All right. So let's start with the idea that we're all unique. This is a very important concept, and Rabbi Soloveitchik shares a really nice idea on this. As you know, we're all created in the image of Hashem. Of course, Hashem doesn't have an image, so how could it be that we are created in the image of Hashem? But it's different aspects. So for the purposes of this hour that we're sharing together, I want to share this idea that one of the points about Hashem is that Hashem is completely unique. There's nothing like Hashem anywhere, anything, completely, echad v'yachid, completely unique. So we also are completely unique. There's nothing exactly like us. There never has been and there never will be. And so so what we want to do during this hour is explore some of our uniqueness so that we'll be able to use that in creating our roadmap. First, we want to understand our starting point. Before we can know where we want to head, we have to know where we actually are. So I want to take some time. We're going to get some paper and a pen. And if you don't have it ready now, excuse me, you can probably listen to the recording and go through everything. But there's really quite a bit of homework for this class. Work that you can do right now, but you may want to continue it a little bit afterwards. Okay, so I want to share, excuse me, a little of my own thought right here. When I first became Jewish, I wanted to be a rabbi. No question about that. I knew where I was headed, and I knew what I wanted to be. And when I got to Israel, I found out that I'm actually too frum to be a rabbi. I wanted to be as Jewish as I could be, and as Jewish as I could be meant being observant and Orthodox, and whatever Orthodox means, mitzvah observant, which meant that women aren't rabbis. So I thought, okay, fine, I won't be a rabbi, but I'll be a Torah teacher. And as I shared my dreams, and any of you who've seen my short little video, you know this story, but I have more to tell here. As I shared my dreams with one of the husbands of a fabulous female Torah teacher that I knew in Israel, he told me that I could never be a Torah teacher like his wife because I didn't have the generations to become a Torah teacher like his wife. And the more I learned Torah, the more I saw that was true, that it does take generations and generations to create the kind of depth that I was hoping to achieve. And so I received that information and realized that that wouldn't be me. And I spent some years in frustration with where I came from and a little bit of why me, and it's not fair, why couldn't I have been born into a Rebbeisha family, why couldn't I have a father who's a big Torah scholar, why didn't I marry a husband who's a big Torah scholar, why didn't I have brothers who love to learn, why didn't I have the cousins and all the family life that I wish I would have had, that I read books about. When I first became Jewish and I started to read, I read a lot of biographies and would pretend during the time that I was reading those biographies that I lived inside the houses of the people that I was reading about, so I could see what it would be like, or pretend what it would be like to grow up in those homes. And I was jealous of the people who did get to grow up in those homes, hopefully jealous in a good way, probably jealous in a little bit of a bad way too. Until finally, it took me a while to grow up and realize that I have generations, and my generations are important. They're not those generations. But it took me a while to take ownership of the generations that Hashem did provide me, the gifts that I do have, and the growth that I've gone through so that I can be who I'm supposed to be. So I realized part of the importance of my generations is the pioneering spirit. My family came to America in 1634, pioneers, and they pioneered out west. And I definitely have that spirit of the pioneer, the one who's willing to seek new territory and make do with what's there and figure things out and put a stake in the land and start building and growing from where I am. And that spirit, which is strong in my family, is strong in me. And so I really appreciate now that I'm grown up having that in me. And I also appreciate the ability that pioneers have to look out over the scene of the world in which they live and decide that that's not the world they want to live in. And they want to create a new world, manifest a new destiny, and become somebody else. So I also have that strong, and I appreciate that. So I feel like I have generations of strength, and I have generations of strong women. Both of my grandmothers, both my father's mother and my mother's mother, had master's degrees in sciences and chemistry and botany, and they were strong women in their own right and community organizers. So even if they weren't the Torah personalities that I wanted, there were certainly personalities of strength and vision and growth and empowerment. And I appreciate the generations that I have. So I think it's important to look at what do we have and how can we bring that into the future that we would like to see. And finally, on the uniqueness idea, a thought by Rav Dessler. So Rav Dessler explains in his Mechtav Me'eliyahu that one reason why we are unique, that Hashem made each one of us unique, and a reason for that is because each relationship then with Hashem is completely unique. It's not possible for anyone to cover the spiritual terrain that you can cover or that I can cover. No one can do what I can do, and no one can do what you can do. So that each one of our contributions to the spiritual climate of the world is completely unique. Nobody can do it the way that we can do it. So that each pathway is unique and none can be compared to another, so that we never have to be second best. We could be second best to our own selves, maybe not achieving what our potential is, but we can never be compared to somebody else and say, oh, I wasn't Miriam like Miriam's Miriam, because only Miriam can be Miriam, and only I can be a Lisa, and only you can be Jill, or Donna, or Sydney, or whoever you are. Only you can be that person. So that your contribution is unique, your relationship is unique, and that's one of the treasures of being created in the image of Hashem, completely unique. Okay, now let's talk about where we're starting from. We know that we have this idea of being built by both our nature and our nurture, and certainly when I was in college, there was this whole controversy of nature versus nurture. I haven't been in college in a while, but I hope we're past that. Who of you went to college? I'm just curious. If you want to tell me, just say yes if you went to college. And you could give me a double yes, I guess. If you took Psychology 101 and you learned about this nature versus nurture controversy, or if it was solved by the time you were in college. Yes and beyond, great. Yeah, so I definitely learned this, and it was interesting. One of the studies that we learned about was a study of identical twin boys. Maybe they weren't identical, twin boys, where actually there was a mishap with the circumcision of one of the boys. They did an electronic circumcision and messed it up. There was a terrible burn, and so they turned that boy into a girl surgically and tried to raise him as a girl, and that was a whole experiment to prove that it's really nurture, not nature, that says who we are. I think we're past that, especially because that particular twin experiment that happened, I believe, in the late 70s has been debunked. It turns out that poor twin grew up and had a terrible sense of self, and finally, through a whole long process, figured out that she was actually a he and re-accepted her male identity, but that all the nurture that the family provided to try to give him a female identity didn't work. Anyway, that being said, let's look at nature versus nurture. So nature is when we say, that's just who I am. You know, that's how I was created, that's who I am. Nurture is, that's how I was raised, what could I do? You know, we can have these excuses and settle into, that's who I am, or that's who I was raised. When in fact, the Jewish teaching is that we are influenced by our nature and influenced by our nurture, but who we are is our choice. So that's one of the particular things that I bring as a teacher to Torah, I think, is that there's no excuses. You can't say that's how I was raised, because I was raised with less Jewish background than pretty much almost, except for convert students, any of my students. And everybody can grow into who they choose to be. Now, it's true. We are influenced by nature and by nurture. I was influenced, for instance, by nurture in terms of empowerment, and you can be who you want to be. And that was certainly a lesson that was taught very strongly in my home of upbringing. And certainly I have a nature of simcha and of curiosity and of drive. So that comes together to be able to help me propel in the directions that I would like to go, help propel me into the directions that I want. But I do want to just say that my voice as a teacher is certainly a Jewish voice, in that we get to pick who we want to be. We get to start with our starting point and then from there choose where we'd like to go. So that's what Abraham did. Abraham was born into a household. It's interesting, my daughter Sarah, when she was probably 6 or 7, I was driving her home from school one day, and she told me, "Ima, I don't believe the story about Abraham." I said, "Which story is that?" She said, "You know, the story where he was raised by Terach with idols all around, and then he figured out by himself that there's one Hashem." So I don't believe that story. I said, "You don't? Why not?" And he said, "Well, I don't believe you can come to believe something different than what you're taught in your house." Now, my daughter knew that I converted to Judaism, but I don't think she knew what that meant. So I said, "Really? You don't believe that somebody could believe something different than what they're taught by their parents?" She said, "No, I really don't." So we had a long conversation where I explained to her more deeply what it means to grow up and to make choices and to start where your parents start you. But Abraham definitely started in one place and was able to step into another place. And that's part of Abraham's tests and empowerments, is the Lech Lecha concept. Lech Lecha. Leave behind your past. Leave behind how you were raised. Leave behind your nature and your nurture. Step into a new future that I will show you, and move ahead. And that is the message of Rosh Chodesh also. The first message that we got as the Jewish people coming out of Mitzrayim is, no matter what caste you were born into, no matter what family you were born into, no matter how you were taught, every single month you can look up into the sky and see a sign of newness and renew yourself. Make yourself fresh. I'm just thinking about the chutzpah when my mother would call me fresh, but the truth is that we're supposed to make ourselves fresh. Maybe not in a chutzpahic way, although we need a lot of chutzpah to get there. So really the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh is every month to remind ourselves that we're not stuck where we came from or what we were born into. We can transcend and we can become new. Today I was just teaching Sefer Chinuch, and we were discussing slavery and the fact that an Eved Kanani, a non-Jewish slave, can in fact convert and become Jewish and then become an equal in the Jewish people. Unlike other slavery systems where even if one is freed, think about America in the 1800s, their title is freed slave. They're still of the slave caste, they just happen to be freed. Whereas in our system, one can completely leave behind their title, leave behind their position, and move on in their life. Okay, all of this brings us to a concept that I'm sure most of you are familiar with, but I'll just review. This is a concept that belongs to Rav Dessler. It's called Nikudat HaBechira, or Nekudas HaBechira for the Ashkenazi speakers out there, or point of choice, sometimes known as the choice point. So this is the concept that we all have a starting place that is formed by the convergence of our nature and our nurture, and from that place we start to make choices. And we can choose ourselves up or down. We can constantly, our choice point can move depending on the choices that we've made, but that we have one, no matter what kind of family we're born into. So imagine somebody born into a family of thieves and thugs, and they're just taught to steal from whoever they can, rob people in the park. So now a 15-year-old from this family is in Central Park stalking somebody. He doesn't have much of a choice if he's going to steal. He's been taught to steal, that's the way he's going to do it. But he sees a woman jogging alone, and now he has a choice. Not if he's going to steal, because he's going to. But if he'll hurt her or not, that's up to him. That is in his choice zone. If he'll hurt her or how much he'll hurt her. Not if he's going to steal, because he has been raised to steal. Now, let's say he sees her and chooses not to hurt her, and she doesn't have anything to steal. And he thought, that wasn't worth it. And the next jogger, he says, you know what, I'm not going to even try. I'm not going to steal. And then he thinks, you know, it's not that nice to steal. Maybe I won't steal today. Now he's made some choices that can choose him into a place where he can now consider if he should steal or not steal. Our choice point, for instance, would be quite different. A classic example that I like to think about is, let's say we filled our cart with groceries, we're in a hurry, we paid for everything, we came out to the car, we load everything into the trunk, and we sit the dental floss on the bottom of the cart and realized we never put it on the conveyor belt, we didn't pay for it. We're late, we're out of dental floss. What should we do? We would never shoplift, not in a million years, nor would we steal this. Do we, A, leave the dental floss in the cart in the supermarket parking lot for somebody else to steal because we're in a rush, so we're just not taking something we didn't pay for? Or do we take the time to bring the cart all the way back into the store so that it won't get stolen, but now it's left there? Or do we bring it back to customer service and just leave it there so that it won't get stolen, at least we're responsible? Or do we run through the checkout and pay for it and go? There's all kinds of choices that we have, but that's in our realm of choice. So it really depends on who we are and how we're holding, where our point of choice is. Now let's talk about nature a little bit. So nature basically is genes, right? And genes determine a million things. Our temperament, our learning ability or lack thereof, how we perceive the world, how we move through the world, our health, whether we will in general be healthy or sick, or how we interact with the different things in the world. Our creativity, I wasn't sure if that falls under temperament or not, but ability to take things and work with them, that's within nature. I believe that could be nurtured too. I'm curious what you would add to this list. Between genes and temperament, learning abilities, disabilities, health, creativity, what else do you think of when you think of your nature? What are some, in a way, fixed things that are part of your starting point that would go on this list? Looks. Good. That's true. How we look, and which definitely makes a difference in terms of how people interact with us and how we interact with the world. A large part, sadly, of our self-esteem comes from how we look. So that's definitely a part of our nature and how we interact. Anybody else? Well, I'll let you think about it. Body type, right? So really, body shape, body type, that's all determined by genes. So you can put that under health. I think along with looks too, but they are separate and distinct. So all those things are things that make a difference. For instance of how it might make a difference, I'm sure you're aware, but let's say you know you should be exercising more, but you really don't like it. You're the type who, by nature, is really sedentary. You know, my favorite exercise is turning pages and chewing. Really, I'd love to, like, have a cookie and read a book. So I have to I was telling myself I have to walk, even though I don't like it, exercise, even though I don't like it. And then I shifted into saying, I have to learn to like walking. It's not really productive to try to overcome your dislikes. Better you should shift your dislikes into something that is at least neutral, if not positive. But so that's nature. That still is your starting point. Okay. Now let's talk about nurture. Nurture, and some of these things might possibly cross over, I think. But nurture, let's start with birth time. I don't mean birthday by this, but the year in which you're born or the era in which you're born, it's nurture because the same exact nature of you, born in the 1800s or born in the 1400s or born in the 100s, would be very different depending on the nurture that's the society around you from the time that you're born in. So there's a certain nurture about the time that you're born in. Your birthplace or your country, you know, even all of us today, right now, we have people in this webinar from, from Colombia, Bogota, Colombia, from Jerusalem, Israel, from New York, from Denver, Colorado. I'm trying to think of all the countries. Anyway, each person has a different, from Mexico, thank you. Right, from all these different places around, and each one of us has a different nurture depending on the country that we're born into. Here in Colorado, Colorado is the skinniest state in the United States, so it's beautiful here. The culture is to hike, to walk, to be in the sun. Everybody loves to be outside. I imagine it's different in New England, and winters are different. In Mexico, part of the nurture is it's help is very inexpensive, so people have live-in help. So it's a whole different way of raising children that however they get dressed and wherever their clothes drop, somebody picks them up. I'm sure it's not the case in every family, but it's a different nurture to have a consciousness that somebody will always be there to take care of you. In Colombia, I don't know that much about Colombia. It would be interesting to hear what that country is like, but I know it's a little scarier and the rule of law is not as strong as you might like it to be. Or as I might like it to be. So that makes a difference too, how we interface with laws and law enforcement in each country goes into our nurture, whether we trust the police or are scared of the police, or if they're a force for good or bad, etc. All of that is part of our nurture. Family of origin. The family that we're raised in, it's interesting, I went last night to a grief support group for parents of suicides, and so we discussed how different people grieve and how different people deal with sadness. So the leader had everybody raise their hand, whoever comes from a family where they were taught to not be sad in public, not cry in public, not talk about things that make other people sad. So who was taught to not talk about things in public that makes other people sad? I'm actually curious here because I have a little theory based on what I saw last night. Just tell me, just say yes or no, if you were taught by your family to not discuss things in your family circle that make other people sad or that might bring other people to tears. Was that part of your education growing up? Very interesting. So most of them are no's. Here's my mother was like that, my dad was like that, my mom was not. No, no, no. So what I noticed in this group is that all the non-Jews raised their hand. And none of the Jews did. The Jews, it was really divided by the ethnic line. Jews have sadness in their lives. And we talk about things that are sad and things that make us cry. And if you think about all the Yiddish jokes, they really are a twist. A lot of the Yiddish jokes are a twist on sadness or irony. We incorporate that into our humor, into our lives. These are parts of conversations that I think culturally we have much more easily, certainly, than the other people in that room. And they were a diverse group, Catholics and Protestants and religious and not religious and different ages and different socioeconomic statuses. But all the Gentiles raised their hands and none of the Jews did. So family of origin can make a big difference in terms of nurture. Socioeconomic status, you know, depending on how much money you have. Can definitely nurture somebody into caring for things longer or for less amount of time or desiring things more or less, but how much money we're raised in and we have makes a difference in terms of how we think about things. Coping mechanisms also is something that we would learn through nurture, how to deal with. That's interesting. Here's just a little thought. My best girlfriend's mother, who is a survivor, always expected her kids not to cry and to even smile, even during giving birth. That's unrealistic. Nevertheless, it shows that there are Jews who have those types of expectations of each other. So coping mechanisms would be nurture, and often that's nurture how to overcome nature. And I'm curious what you would add to this list in terms of what goes into your nurture, what shapes you besides just your nature, besides where you're born or your time that you're born or your family or your socioeconomic status or the coping mechanisms that you've been developed or given, if you have some other additions to this list. Good friends, education, schooling, trauma, we're going to get into that for sure, trauma. Community, birth order, excellent. I didn't go into in either nature or nurture into a little bit more mystical stuff, which I'm not even sure. I'll just mention it, but just to throw it out there, but we're not going into, let's say, the mazal that you're born into. That probably has more to do with nature than nurture. And we know, Ein mazal Yisrael, as long as we Jews connect ourselves deeply to Torah, we bypass the mazal system. But there is something about the energy that you're born under as well. Okay. Now let's look at challenges. The different challenges that we face, I think, also make a difference in who we are and would probably be under the category of nurture. So we have internal challenges, which might be nature, and they would include, let's say, brain chemistry, attitude, health. I'm sure there's more here of internal challenges. And depending on how these work, they might not be challenges. These might be assets. We have a different screen for assets. But let's just think about brain. Let's just look on the challenging side. Brain chemistry can be a tremendous challenge. So it would be interesting for you to be writing down some of the challenges that you face, some of the nature and nurture that you have. I am going to post this whole PowerPoint on my website, so you'll be able to find it under the special tab that we have. The website is abiteoftorah.com, and under audio, under personal growth, is this workshop. There's a special page for the roadmap to the ideal you. So this PowerPoint will be posted there, and you'll be able to look at it if you want to go through the whole thing, so that you can start writing down and making lists of yourself. What goes into your nature, what's part of your nurture, so that you can see a better picture of yourself, and then your challenges. So brain chemistry, what's going on there? Are you neutral? Are you generally happy? Are you generally depressed? What's up with that? Attitudes that you have, I think that could be nature or nurture. Nevertheless, they're there, and they might be a challenge. So that could be an attitude of lackadaisicalness, which probably is not a challenge for most people who have signed up for this. This is a self-selecting group of people who care. Nevertheless, one person did write that she has a challenge of what she feels is laziness. I'll probably challenge her on that. So what are your attitudes, challenges that you face? And health, there may be significant health challenges. So what might some of those be that make up the unique you? And then external challenges. Single parenthood could be a huge challenge. Whether that's actual single parenthood, meaning somebody's divorced or conceived without getting married and is raising children without a partner, or de facto single parenthood, where somebody really is alone even inside their marriage raising the children, or angry or oppositional relatives, so that includes spouse or in-laws, siblings, parents, people who, because of the way they deal with you, present significant challenges in your life. Financial woes can be significant challenges. And for that, I would let everybody decide where they are in terms of financial woes. For some people, woe is they don't have you know, extra food in the refrigerator. And some people, woe is they don't have retirement money in the bank. And it's so far apart. You can't compare one to another. It has to do with what you feel in your relationship with money, and if it's in your way or not. What would you add to the challenge list? Significant challenges, internal or external, that go into making up who you are. And I don't mean here like a smaller challenge. I don't know. Maybe even a car breaking down or something, but a significant challenge, right? Shalom Bayit could be a significant challenge. Somebody is writing, they have a very bad connection. I'm guessing that's computer. I hope that's not connection with them. Could be connection with people, but lack of self-confidence, mental health of parents, sure, can be a very significant challenge. So, children, for sure. Difficult children. Later on in the series, we're definitely going to talk about dealing with some of that. Not a parenting workshop, but working with our challenges. But for now, I just want you to write them down so that you have clarity. What are your challenges? Let's see what this one is. I need this person's. Everything falls under attitude, somebody writes. It's your nature, even if it's been nurtured into you. Example, somebody has a Yetzirah that's negative, so they work very hard to counter that. Right, that could be a natural Yetzirah that could be inculcated into you. So the question is where you don't have to necessarily know where it's coming from, internal or external, just that it's there for you. Challenges in the workplace or connection with husband, for sure, can all be significant challenges, and that's important to recognize. So write those down so that you have clarity for yourself what your challenges are. Okay, now we want to talk about midot. Midot, the word means measurement. Mida is a measurement. It's interesting to think about the measurement. Torah is often compared to water. Water is life-giving, and water has no shape of its own. Water takes on the shape of that which it is poured into. So our measurements, our midot, our character traits, our shape, they make up the shape of who we are. And as we work on our midot, then we create a shape that's either beautiful or not so beautiful, depending on how much we work on our midot. And then the Torah that's poured into us is either beautiful or whatever shape our midot are. So let's take a look. We need to take an honest inventory of our own midot. Excuse me, I did not make an exhaustive list here of midot, but just some to get you thinking. You can choose to do as much homework as you want over the coming week, but let's just start with a little list and you can see what you could think of. Okay, so I wrote down both Hakaras HaTov, and thankfulness as two separate midot. And here, by Hakaras HaTov, I mean actually the Hakara part, the recognition of good that's in your life, that which is separate from thankfulness or appreciating that which you've been given, but actually being able to see what's good. And sometimes we squander what's good in our lives, and then we don't even see that we had it. I was thinking of an example earlier. I had given somebody permission to build a garden in my yard. She needed extra space. She lives with very limited green space, and I have a lot of it, much of which I don't use. So I told her she could use a piece of our yard to build a garden. And she started accruing a certain kind of a garden. She started accruing a lot of stuff, and in the end, I realized over 6 months that there was really just a pile of junk in my yard and not a garden. And while I didn't mind her experimental garden, I did mind a pile of stuff. And I finally had to tell her, and I did what she asked. Also, I trimmed trees and I cleared a space. And in the end, I had to ask her to tell her that she couldn't build the garden and ask her to take the stuff away, which was a hassle for her and a disappointment. And I don't know. I'm not judging at all here, but I'm just saying sometimes we experience things like that where people give us something, and then since it doesn't work out, we don't even think we were given anything. So the actual recognition of good in our lives or gifts in our lives is separate than feeling thankful for them. So So what kind of midot do you have personally? I think for each one of these that I'm going to show on the screen now, you might just want to put like a line of 1 to 10, and you could do a slider on that to see where you're holding. Because everybody has a little bit of each thing, but you could see, are you lower towards the 1 or higher towards the 10 on each one of these midot, which again is not an exhaustive list. So hakarat tov, recognizing the good in your life, thankfulness, appreciating what you've been given, chesed, kindness, how are you in giving? Are you the type that has a flow of chesed? You know, where are you holding in chesed? Zrizut, I guess I didn't really spell that correctly. I'm not such a letter person. Alacrity, that is spelled correctly, I checked it out. But zrizut probably should be spelled, whatever, I'll let you figure out how to spell it. Thank you. Z-R-I-Z-U-T, zrizut. Yeah. Whatever. That's someone's spell check, of course, doesn't work on these things. But that means alacrity, going quickly to do something, not letting a mitzvah become chametz in your hands, really taking the time for it to not become, for it to dissipate. So how are you with doing things quickly? Seder, or organization, where is your organization level? I would just say to detangle organization from ratzon. It's two separate things in a way, meaning some people have good organizational skills. Their nida of organization may be pretty good, but they're very distractible. So the result is that they're not organized, or they have a lot that they would like to accomplish, which doesn't include being organized. So it doesn't mean necessarily that their organization is lacking, just that other things are getting in the way. So something to think about there. Anger. How are you on anger? There's a lot to think about in anger, so I just wrote a few things. Ease of getting anger, how angry you get, how long do you stay angry, how easily are you to appease? You know, so to take a look at your anger and how that works in your life, if this is something that you've worked on, not worked on, would like to work on. Right now, we're not talking about working on. We're just talking about taking an inventory of who you are. What's your nature and your nurture, your challenges, your mido, just to kind of get a picture of yourself. Be as honest as you can here, because you really want to see, who am I today, so that you can know where you want to move forward. Sadness. Again, where does that come up in your life? Is it usually appropriate sadness, inappropriate sadness? What do you think of as appropriate and inappropriate in terms of sadness? There's so many different things to examine here. But sadness is a midah, so you can decide how you want to function with that one. Simchat HaChaim, happiness. Not just happiness, but happiness in life, like the joie de vivre, the joy of being alive, and the excitement over seeing things and engaging with things. What kind of Simchat HaChaim do you enjoy or work on? How do you see that as a midah in your life? Sameach b'chelko, being happy with. So the reason why I did not write this out in English is because I wanted to have the ability to translate the word chelko in a few different ways. So being happy with what you have, that's the first translation. Happy with with what you have. Sameach b'chelko means to be happy with what you have. Nobody has everything. Everybody has something. Are you happy with what you have? But also to understand that it could mean Sameach b'chelko, happy with what he has. To actually take simcha in what somebody else has. Are you able to really have joy in somebody else's receiving good things? Or is it only a happiness that comes when you have what you want? And are you happy even though you really understand not just that's what you have, but that it's only a part and you'll only ever have a part of that which you want? Is there a happiness in the part that you have? Hatmada. I really put three things here because they're, each one is a little bit different. Stick-to-itiveness in English means to stay with it. Hatmada, or hasmada in Hebrew, is often used around learning. learning Torah, people have hasmada, they learn a lot, a long time. But it really does mean, it has the word tamid in it. Are you there? Perseverance, somebody gave me as a word for it. It's not just, I guess it could be perseverance, but the ability to, yeah, stick to it. Right, good. And in Yiddish, the word is zitzfleisch, the ability to really sit there and stay there. Perseverance is an excellent word. Thank you. So that, how is that mida in your life? Are you somebody who flits from thing to thing, or do you have the ability to persevere to accomplish something? Maybe not every time, but do you have it? If you want to bring it. Oh, okay. That's the end of that list on different midot. There's more midot. That's not the end. So you are free to make a long list of midot if you'd like, but I think at least those to examine and see how they're holding inside you, just to know yourself a little bit better. Draw a picture of yourself. This, by the way, I recommend that either if you could do this on the computer or scan it through something and save this, or if you're the type that saves things in paper, I think you'll really appreciate looking back at this years later. It's nice just to see a snapshot of where you're holding. So it's really some journaling work. Okay, in addition to your nature, and in addition to your nurture, and in addition to your challenges, and in addition to your midot, which could be from nature and nurture, there's choices that you've made. And who you are really is the conglomeration of the choices that you made. And here I think it would be nice to examine some of the major choices that you made and where they've brought you until now. This can be a little bit scary. It can be empowering too, but it is important to know that we chose ourselves into where we are right now. We chose our marriage partner, or chose out of our marriage partner, or chose not to have a marriage partner, or made choices that might have precluded us from a marriage partner, Lalinu. Or we chose our education or a lack of education. And it's true, I mean, I spoke to one man who's probably about 38, who's having a very hard time making a living. And he said, well, why did my parents let me major in art history? You know, why didn't they tell me at the time to get a degree in something practical? Okay, I hear that. And yet he chose it. He did choose it. It's true, we make a lot of choices with a younger self that's not experienced enough to really understand the ramifications of the choices that we're making. Nevertheless, it pays for this exercise to really take responsibility for the fact that we ourselves made these choices, whether we were younger or stupider, weaker, or chose not to take counsel that was available to us at the time, or didn't even know, didn't even recognize that there was counsel available to us at the time. Still, we made choices that make a difference in our lives. So let's look at some of them. School and education. What kind of choices did we make around our own schooling and our own education? I don't personally believe that education and school equal each other. I think sometimes school gets in the way of education. Sometimes education can happen very nicely, completely separate from school. So I put a slash between them. You can figure out where you want to go. This engaging in a workshop like this certainly is continuing education, and whatever reading and thinking that you do is also about educating. So what about your school slash education choices that you have made throughout the years have brought you to where you are right now? So something to contemplate. Health. You've made choices about your health. We've all made choices, right? The nutrition that we have, the drugs that we take, and here the drugs can be legal and illegal, both. The exercise that we get or don't get, the sleep that we get and we don't get over the long term, all of that adds up and makes a big difference. We don't feel it. If anybody, nobody returned a sheet to me of me getting to know you that indicated that anybody is in their very early 20s. But if you are, be forewarned that it all catches up. So somebody's asking, and this is really a very important question, what if you're sick to your stomach about some of the choices that you've made and have a hard time forgiving yourself? We are going to get there, not in this session. We will discuss it. But that's why I prefaced this screen with, it's scary. It is scary. I I think it is important to take responsibility for choices that you've made and actually list them. And you could list if you think it was a good choice, a bad choice, you're embarrassed about the choice, you wish you hadn't made that choice, if you woulda, shoulda, coulda, you woulda known, you woulda done it differently. That's fine. Nevertheless, you did make them. It's just important to recognize them right now. What about financial choices that you've made? How you earn money, how you spend money, how you save money or don't, how you give money. There's financial choices that you've made along the way that have brought you to where you are. Of course, there's other things too, and we do need to look at our own selves and realize that our choices make a difference. I actually heard Rabbi Riady spoke at length about credit cards, and he said really they should be called debt cards. Many of us would not sign up if we got a letter in the mail that says, yours, an invitation to accrue another $40,000 in debt. Sign here, and for just 20% interest, you will be able to charge whatever you want and accrue debt that will be difficult for you to get rid of later. How many of us would sign up for a debt card? And yet credit sounds so nice. So these are choices that we make, and we do have to learn how to take responsibility for every time we swipe a card that's beyond our means. And the consequences of that in our lives. Okay, here's a scary thing, just to add to the sick to the stomach feeling. Body use, how we've cared for our bodies and how we've damaged them. And here particularly, sadly, for some of us who, let's say, went to college or non-Jewish high schools or perhaps even Jewish ones, we've made some choices with our bodies, who we've shared them with and who we've kept them from that we may regret or feel very empowered by. So that's something to think about too. What have we done, with our bodies that are part of the choices that bring us to this point that we're at today? Relationships with others. The giving and the taking, the kindness, the harshness in relationships. I have seen people, some older people, who feel very lonely in their lives, even though they have large families, because they were really hard in their relationships with children or with others. And so in their old age, are alone because their kids can't stand to be with them. And they feel bad that their kids don't pay attention, and yet they chose themselves into that situation. Maybe they don't realize it, but they are lying in the bed that they made. You know, if you're harsh and if you criticize and if you're mean and if every phone call is, you know, why didn't you call before? Then who wants to call and who wants to be a part of that kind of a life? It's natural for people to drift away. So, or if you're a very giving person and you're kind and you reach out and you always make people feel good about themselves and people just love to bask in the radiance of your glow. So think about the choices that you have made in relationships that you have and the impact that that has in your life. Marriage. It's marriage choices, how faithful we are in our marriages. And by this, I don't just mean physical fidelity, but also fantasy fidelity. Do we think of others? Do we wish for others? Do we see somebody else's husband or wife and say, I should have married somebody like that? You know, that kind of thing. That's a lack of fidelity in a marriage and can create difficulties in building a marriage. Is our marriage growing? Is it supportive? These are all choices that we make on a daily basis that brings us to the marriage that we're living in right now. Or not. What would you add to this list of significant choices that we make that go into making up the unique self that we are? I'm waiting for you guys to type into the box so I can read a few. What do you think are some of the significant choices that one might make? It doesn't have to be you personally, but that people make. In addition to their education, their health, their financial, their body use, their relationships, their marriage, different things that can have an effect. Good. How we use our time, the profession that we chose. Excellent. How we daven, somebody saying our careers, yes. So these are all different things that definitely make us into who we are, that has to do with the choices that we've made. Okay. I think we'll move a little bit faster. I'll just do this whole page so you can see it all at once. Oops, go back. Essence. Okay, so we talked about challenges before. Here is, I'll just read a few of the other choices that we make. Community commitments, ruchnius yiddishkeit, which mitzvos we focus on. So those are very helpful in terms of choices. Okay, let's look at assets, the assets that we have. So we talked about challenges before. Here's the flip side of some of the same things. Do we have an enjoyable temperament? Are we happy, easygoing? Do we seek and remember good things? That would be an asset. If we have that, we might not. Do we have a loving and supportive family? Are we financially comfortable? Again, defined by how you define this. You know, it can be a complete spectrum. I know people who are making $500,000 a year and still can't make the end of the month because they bought a house that's a little too big, they drive cars that are a little too nice, they send their kids to fancy schools, they go on vacations, they wear fancy shaitels, whatever it is, and at the end of the month, they're holding their breath because they just don't quite have enough. And there are other people who are making $1,000, $2,000 a month, and they're comfortable because they have everything they need. So financially comfortable, completely up to your definition. Is that an asset that you have or not? Do you live in a pleasant community? What are some of the other assets that you might add to your asset list or that other people could think about as assets in who they are, understanding their starting point for this journey on the roadmap to the ideal you? Okay, I'm not seeing you guys type, but we are getting closer to the end of the hour, so we're going to go on. Oh, good. Here's a nice asset, a healthy health status, if you're healthy. Being Jewish, that's a nice asset to have, for sure. Okay, here's a list of desires, and for this, I'm just putting up desires because the next screen is dreams. And I just want to show, like, dreams and desires are related, but desires are very ethereal and not even dreamt about yet. So desires might be thin, beautiful, rich, healthy, organized, focused, learned, strong marriage, peaceful home, increased emunah, but you didn't go anywhere with that yet. You just kind of have these, yeah, it would be nice if I was, but it's not even up to the dream level yet. You haven't really worked on even fantasizing what you want. So that's what dreams are about. And I just put a few of them, the difference between some of those desires and some of the dreams, right? So let's say you the thin, beautiful. A dream might be, I want to look like so-and-so. And you have in mind who that so-and-so is. That's your picture of thin and beautiful. That's dreaming already, that you want that kind of a look. Healthy. You might define healthy however you do, lean, strong, drug-free. By drug-free here, I mean it could be illegal drug-free, but I mean, let's say somebody's overweight, and because they're overweight, they're significantly overweight, because they're overweight, they're pre-diabetic or diabetic, and they have blood pressure things, so they would like to be lean enough that they're drug-free, that they no longer need that. Alert, meaning they sleep enough or they do enough brain exercise that they're alert. So they might have in mind what healthy feels like or would look like if they would get there. Organized. Not just saying, I wish I was organized, but you know what you kind of mean. Your dreams are that your surfaces would be clear, your shelves would be organized, your calendar would be kept, you wouldn't have overdrafts in the bank because you're actually paying attention to what goes in and what comes out. That kind of organized. You don't miss appointments, whatever your organizational challenges are, but you have I wish I was organized, but kind of what it might be like. Focused. That you would like to have clear goals, clear steps to achieve them, daily inspiration or regular inspiration so that you keep focused on the fact that you have goals and stepping on your steps. Still, these are just dreams. You want to be learned. You want to know Shas and Poskim, Rambam and Zohar, right? Not just learned, but you have like areas that you wish you could take in and belong to you. And of course, that would be different for everybody. But just think about what areas you'd like to be learned in. A strong marriage, what does that mean? You'd like to have a strong marriage, that means loving feelings, supporting each other, we don't fight, whatever that means to you, but more than just strong marriage. Increased emunah, You know, I've like, so that could just be what I wish for. That's my desire. But really a dream is already feeling Hashem's presence in my life on a daily basis. What could that be like? For homework this week, I'd like to see you dream big, because all these dreams can become bigger than this. Take your desire and run with it a little bit. Flesh it out into a dream. But a dream is not enough. Goals are really what our aim is. And again, we're not going to be setting goals by the end of this class, but I really do want people to be thinking more about their dreams so that we can then get some goals out of them. Goals are dreams with a deadline. I don't know who Diana Scharf Hunt is, but I have heard the quote before, so I looked her up just to be able to attribute to the proper name. So we definitely want to put a deadline on some of our dreams so that they'll become a goal, so that we'll be able to actually achieve them. Let's look at goals and dreams and some of their differences. Let's see. Again, here I'm going to go pretty quickly. I think I'll just put them all up right away. Okay. Goals are something you act upon. Dreams are just something that you think about. Goals have deadlines. Dreams are just dreamy. Dreams are free. Goals have a cost. Goals produce results. Dreams do not. Dreams are imaginary. Goals are based in reality. Let's flesh that out for 1 second. You could dream that you'd be Superwoman, Superman, or I remember once one of my kids, when they were, all the kids are little, one of them said, "Right, Ima, right, you wish you were an octopus." I said, "An octopus? What do you mean?" "Right, you wish you had 8 arms so you could take care of all of us." So I don't think I ever said I wish I was an octopus, but they got that I wish I was more capable with more arms and more physical ability to handle all of those little children. However, dreaming that you're an octopus, even a beautiful, capable, learned, Jewishly connected octopus, is not connected to reality. So dreams are imaginary. Goals are based in reality. Goals have a finish line. Dreams never have to end. So you can certainly dream. There's a place for dreams. And it can be fun to dream, but it's not what gets things done. They don't have to end ever. Goals actually have a deadline. Dreams can inspire you. So that's an important place for dreams. But goals can change your life once you make it real, which we'll talk about hopefully next time. Goals must have a focus. Dreams do not. Goals require hard work. Dreams just require your imagination. Dreams stretch your imagination. Goals stretch you. So again, for homework, I really do want you to stretch your imagination. Dream bigger. Dream as big as you want. Nothing has to stand in the way of your dreams. Nothing has to stand in the way of your desire. Desire what you want and dream what you want. Even if it's impractical, it's fine. Come up with some dreams so that we can take those and make it at least part of the dreams into goals. But there's no point in making goals that are too small. You should have a big dream so that we can make goals that are appropriate. Okay. All that being said, here is a little statement that I made up that you might read if you like to. Fill it in how you like and change it how you want. But after you've done some of the work of today, going through some of these lists and thinking about things, you can fill in some of these blanks here. I'll read for myself. I am a 49-year-old woman created in the image of Hashem. I have a unique nature, nurture, history, that includes my choices and challenges, and set of dreams and goals. Be'ezrat Hashem, I can use, and here you can fill in what you want, I can use or am using, I will use, I plan to use my special self to create a singular relationship with Hashem. Through that, I can shine, or I am shining, or I will shine, my light and the light of Hashem into my life, my family, my community, and the whole world. Of course, you can make the statement however you want. This is really a statement that I resonate with. But I think it's important to anchor yourself in who you actually are, your age, your nature, your nurture, your history, your choices, all the things that we talked about today. All of that has to become a recognized part of you so that you can really see who you are, so that we can move forward with more clarity. And finally, next week, We're going to be looking at life balance. So we'll take a look at the various areas of our life. We're going to really work on making our dreams into goals, so getting more specific with that. Make sure that our goals are reasonable goals. We should not be underreaching and we should not be overreaching. Of course, that will have to be adjusted, but we want to create some balance that our goals are reasonable for us, not too big and not too small, so that we can really achieve what we want to be able to achieve. And again, so that's the coming attraction for next week, but the homework is dream big for this week. Take that picture of yourself where you are right now and then do some dreaming. Where do you want to be? And next week we'll talk about bringing that into some perspective and setting some actual goals. Any questions right now before we sign off? I can just back up here. Somebody said they want the statement of uniqueness again. You can copy it here. And any information that you want, of course, will be available on my website. I'm going to post this shortly. Bezrat Hashem. Okay, thanks so much. I appreciate everybody being here. Please feel free to email me about anything that you'd like to. And I appreciate the emails that I already got. And I look forward to growing together. And I'll see you next week.